I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this, cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope. So no overdose, cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones, bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Holy hell, that was a crazy, crazy night. And it's overflowed into today with just a massive uprising in the streets now. Protesters going on, and just, you know, finally, people out in the streets upset about the electoral political system in the United States. I mean, it's kind of refreshing, right? Unfortunately, it looks like some violence has started to occur in Seattle, where police are responding to gunfire and reports of 5 people shot. I don't know if it was, according to some people, it was taking place near some of the protests, the anti-Trump protests in Seattle. So, you know, crazy times, man. We got a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to be taking some calls. You know, the good news is that Hillary Clinton lost. The bad news is that Donald Trump won. So, you know, I don't know how to take it. But we're going to be, you know, talking all about it tonight on the show. Let me introduce my panel, because we've got so much to go through tonight. DB Schwartz, how are you doing tonight, man?
Doing good, Nick. I'm just kind of watching what's going on in St. Paul up here. And it's a small one. It's not getting too crazy. But Chicago's got to be huge from the looks of it. And then, yeah, Seattle has that shooting already. 5 injured. I see 2 were taken to the hospital. So, I mean, you know, it's just too predictable, dude.
Yeah. Oh man. I gotta admit, I had it all wrong. I mean, I thought for sure that it was going to be Hillary Clinton. I thought the fix was already in. So you know, I don't know. Did we miscalculate here on the anti-media radio? We're not right all the time, but you know, we've made some accurate predictions. Jake Anderson, I wanna bring you in and get your take on, you know, what the hell happened.
Oh, I don't know. No one knows. I mean, it was gonna be one of the two, and we were wrong on which one it was. We have to use every political cliche in the book. We have an unknown quantity now, as opposed to if Hillary had won, we would pretty much know what we were getting. I'll admit, I, like you, I totally expected Hillary to win, and I'm a little actually surprised at how screwed up in the head I am today. I don't think this reality had, it was so absurd from the beginning, this alt-right takeover but with a reality show guy who has expressed so much hatred, and yet the stark irony is he released his first 100-day plan sometime this week. I don't know when, actually. At first I thought it was he released it today, but it wasn't today. And when I first started looking through it, I was like, okay, well, look, he's going to pull us out of TPP. There was a couple other things in there that are like, all right, this isn't something about NAFTA, pulling us out of one of the NAFTA things. But then when you start getting to the environment and the Supreme Court nominees as a expired liberal, I definitely have a feeling of almost, I don't want to say Judas, I don't know what the appropriate guilt metaphor is here, but I don't know what anyone could have done differently. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, don't like Hillary Clinton, but we are in uncharted waters here. We have no idea what's about to happen, and that's pretty scary. So I don't know, man. I'm confused, just like everyone else. But I'm not gonna try and couch it or hedge it by saying, you know, some blustery thing about, you know, well, she was just as bad. The truth is I don't think that, and I don't think a lot of people out there are terrified right now. And I think their terror is quantifiably different than the terror that people under who would be angry at Hillary Clinton right now would feel. I don't think for a minute that an uneducated white gun owner was as afraid of that right being taken from them as a woman today is thinking that she is not going to have reproductive rights, or that a gay person is going to be worried that they can't keep their marriage to their loved one, or that Muslims are going to be deported. I can see their side of it. I'm different than my liberal brethren in that I can totally see their side of it. I do think it's a qualitatively different fear, though. But hey, maybe I'm just returning to my liberal roots here. I don't know.
DB, I wanted to ask you, man. I mean, has the script been flipped here? And you know, Hillary Clinton was supposed to win, because according to everything that I was able to read from all the coverage and all the things, the leaks and all the stuff that I saw going on, the collusion with the media and how the neocon establishment even got behind Hillary Clinton. I mean, are we officially off script here, or is this part of some crazy plan?
I guess the question becomes who or what is Assange and WikiLeaks and Anonymous, and what real role do they represent? And they just by the hair of their chin were able to bring out just enough stuff to make her completely unpalatable to anyone who was paying attention. Anyone who read WikiLeaks couldn't vote for her. And I'm totally guilty of all day guilt tripping people for saying, why did you not find out about who she was before you went with her over Bernie for the safe choice? It's your fault. It is your fault. You're the idiots that passed up a guy that for one time in our freaking generation could have brought something good about out of government, could have gave people at least a fair chance. I mean, I'm not going to say Trump's not, but Trump's just not going to use the government in the way that people would have been benefited from it. He's going to use it to enrich himself and the elite. Is he better than Hillary in the regard that we maybe staved off World War III with Russia? Yeah. But what does that mean? Does that mean now we ally with them and fight China later, a year or two from now? I mean, does it just delay the inevitable? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing that I'm going to touch on that, and then I want to go back to some of the stuff on Hillary and why she lost. But first, I want to touch on foreign policy with Trump, because I agree with you, DB, in that, and that is the main reason why I was so opposed to Hillary Clinton, like just completely opposed, and of Trump as well. You know, but I knew that one of them was eventually going to win. And, you know, with Hillary, she was pretty much openly advocating starting up a war with Russia. And that is something that is extremely dangerous, that could have really led to something that, you know, nobody wants to see, which could be a big, giant war, and which may very well have led to World War III. Now, on the other hand, with Trump's foreign policy, I see so many of his supporters saying, oh, Trump is going to bring peace to the earth and this, that. And it's like, no, he's not. Trump has openly talked about bombing the shit out of all these countries and taking their oil. The only difference is that he doesn't want to fight against Russia. He wants to fight with Russia to take over the Middle East. That's really the only difference. Is that slightly better for us as Americans because we're not going to be in a hot war with Russia? Yeah. But it's not any better for all these countries, I don't think, around in the Middle East, like Iraq and Syria and, you know, all these trouble hotspots around the Middle East, Palestine, that are going to be continuously having to deal with the U.S. empire. Trump is not going to end the U.S. empire. Anyone saying that, I mean, time will only tell, but I'll say it right now, that is not going to happen. So, you know, Trump is not some kind of anti-war, isolationist, non-interventionist. No, I mean, his rhetoric talked about bombing any country where there's ISIS. That's in basically every single Muslim country. So he's basically, more or less, you know, looking at his foreign policy, it's very similar to Obama's, except he doesn't want to confront Russia. That's really the big difference. So it's not anything extremely out of the ordinary. Yeah, it does stop the direct conflict with Russia, hopefully. But everything else remains, from what I've seen, it will remain status quo. So, DB, back to what you were saying, man, and let's start from the beginning here, because of WikiLeaks, we learned a lot about the campaign and what the Hillary Clinton campaign thought about Donald Trump early on. And here's the thing that really got me, and I noticed it last night, and I saw a few other people talking about it today. There was a British magazine that covered it. But, you know, here's the funniest part. Hillary Clinton identified Trump as the single weakest candidate. Because he was so extreme and his rhetoric was so incendiary, and obviously when he declared his presidency, he offended like a huge chunk of the voting public, the Latino public, and then he offended a bunch of Muslims, which don't make up that much of the voting population, but Latinos are huge. So, you know, the Clinton campaign identified Trump as the quote-unquote Pied Piper, one of the Pied Piper candidates, which was Trump, Ben Carson, and Ted Cruz. Those are the three people that Hillary Clinton wanted to run against. She did not want to run against Rand Paul. She did not want to run against Marco Rubio. She did not want to run against any of the other moderates like Kasich or any of those guys. So the Clinton campaign wanted to run against Donald Trump. In fact, according to some of the emails that came out of WikiLeaks, they encouraged the media to cover Trump and to legitimize him. And looking at Hillary Clinton's deep, deep connections with the mainstream media, I wouldn't doubt that she pulled a few strings to have them give a bunch of coverage to Trump. Now, looking back at the media coverage of Trump, I mean, he received over $1 billion in free media coverage. Part of it is because he was savvy as far as how to gather headlines by making crazy statements and stuff like that. The other part of it undoubtedly was marching orders coming from the DNC and the Clinton campaign, because they wanted to make Trump, they wanted him to win the primary so that they could run against him, because everyone figured, yeah, Trump will be easy to beat. He's crazy. He's said a bunch of stuff. He's already offended half the country. How in the hell could he win? And that really brings me back to what DB and Jake, you guys are both kind of saying, is how goddamn awful is Hillary Clinton to lose to the guy that already offended 3/4 of the country? I mean, how bad do you got to be to lose against Donald Trump? That, to me, is the most craziest thing, when, in fact, the Democrats had their chance to get Bernie Sanders, who was beating Trump by like 15 points in most polls. I mean, the election would have been over a month ago, would have been over 2 months ago.
Here's the thing, Nick. I don't think they realized that the Epstein stuff went so deep and it involved even her and Uma. And I think the NYPD got a hold. And I think they basically said this: we're family men. You can't buy us off. We're not going to allow this to happen. We're going to release it, or you're going to make it so that she exits and Trump slides in and she can fly off into the sunset to Qatar and live out her life with $1.8 billion in a sultan's palace, and they can go far, far away. And that was to prevent what would have happened. Now, if you think what's going on in the streets now is at all inconvenient, you can definitely imagine what would have happened, especially in the South, with an armed presence doing this exact same thing. That would actually open us up to be attacked, because then the military and the National Guard would have to contend with an armed populace doing the exact same thing. And they couldn't afford to do that. So they made the deal. And honestly, give credit to Anonymous WikiLeaks and whoever else. We know somebody died to present this information. The name hasn't been released yet. And the video hasn't been, and it may not be, because honestly, that video would tear this country apart even with Trump in office. So I honestly think that's what happened. And I think the military-industrial complex took control back from the banking, international banking cartels. And honestly, is it any surprise? Men with guns always beat men with pens, right?
It's a great comparison. I think the real answer there lies with, and this actually came from the what are those books called? Game of Kings or something?
Game of Thrones?
Yeah, the books that are based on that are the show is based on these books, and in one of the books it says, they asked the question, like, well, who has the power, the soldier, the king, or the businessman? And the trick question was, it's whoever people believe have the power, you know. And that's really I think what it comes down to. It's really not who really physically has the power, because the public is the true power, right? The public is the true superpower, and whoever they lend their support to are the people that are going to have the power, right? And so right now, you know, the U.S. government has a huge power, because the people of this country still, for the time being, believe in that government in some ways. But that could all be changing. I mean, there's people marching out in the streets. And when was the last time that you guys saw a presidential election and there's people out protesting? And there was actually minor riots going on over in Oakland. And it's crazy, because the country is so different in different parts, right? And we've talked about this previously on the show. Right now...
But why did it take this, Nick? This makes this in a way brings the legitimacy level down a lot, because it took this. Why didn't you do it when it was the primary? Why didn't you do it before it got to this asinine level?
Yeah, I mean, good point. You know,
yeah, they should have done it when it became clear through WikiLeaks that they had rigged the primary. But they were so hubristic, they were so arrogant, that, I mean, it really was a political establishment. And I really don't think we can overlook that, of all the factors, and there are many, many factors as to why this happened. So many so that, you know, large books will be written by many people on this. But Hillary Clinton, of all the things she represented, for many people, she represented the corrupt political establishment. And I don't think Donald Trump is going to grow into anything but that. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, I think is a good Who lyric. And I think that'll be the same thing as it's always been. But she really did represent that, and that's why it's so absolutely absurd that the Democratic Party, went up against a populist insurgent candidate with an establishment candidate, instead of embracing the insurgent candidacy of Bernie Sanders that had very clear signs of being able to match that enthusiasm. It was a basic political miscalculation that will be written about and studied for decades.
Terrible campaign, dude. Terrible choice with the DNC, and, you know,
$6.6 billion wasted.
Yeah, just to find a horrible person to run this country. Terrible, terrible process. And you know, here's the funny thing too, or interesting thing. You know, Obama was also an insurgent candidate, and he came in 2008 as a, you know, he was a kind of a populist, a anti-war candidate that really tapped into the frustrations people had with the Bush, you know, administration and all the wars and stuff, and, you know, a bunch of other grievances. And Obama swept into power, and then Obama kind of just became the status quo, and he shifted the Democratic Party to the right, where you couldn't really distinguish Republican from Democrat on many, many issues outside of maybe social issues and Obamacare. I mean, other than that, they're almost identical. And so for the second administration in a row, you've got an insurgent candidate. And so this to me tells me that there's a pattern starting to develop here, because prior to that, I mean, you know, prior to Obama, you had Bush, which was just an old, boring white guy. And prior to Bush, you had Clinton, which was just a kind of smooth old white guy. But by no means, I don't think Bill Clinton was much of an insurgent candidate. So basically what you have here is a pattern developing of just extreme frustration growing within the electorate. Now, if Trump gets into office, when Trump takes office, and if he goes back on his campaign promises, and he becomes this just another establishment hack that just carries on the status quo, there is going to be a huge challenge from the left. And it's going to be somebody like Bernie Sanders, and the Democrats are not going to have any choice but to run with it, because there's no way in hell they're going to commit suicide with another Hillary Clinton. But, you know, at this point, from what I can see, and now with all these people marching in the streets against Trump, I mean, the American public is at a boiling point, and they are so done, they are so fed up, whether they're right wing or left wing or everybody else in between, everybody is really fed up right now. And I as far as I can tell, status quo politics are pretty much on the way out, and we're in a serious phase of political transition here, which hopefully leads not down the route, which it can go two ways. It can go to the route of let's make Trump the dictator, or it can go the route of let's drastically reform this corporate government and actually make it back into a kind of representative democracy. And, you know, that's really we're at a crossroad right now, and we've kind of been in this corporate status quo for like several decades. Ever since basically Nixon, we've been in this status quo where it's just like, you know, same old same, the rich get rich, the poor get poor, keep everything kind of held together with a massive welfare state, and keep the money kind of being exported through the military industrial complex. People are fed up with it. And in fact, I'm not sure that the public can actually physically survive much longer of it. And so, you know, we're at this point now where people are about ready to snap. And that's what got Trump elected. And I'll tell you what, I'll tell you why those polls were all wrong. The polls were wrong because people were, because of all this politically correct culture and all this shit, and you know, a lot of it is legitimate, but a lot of it is just over the top. People were ashamed or embarrassed to admit that they were going to support Trump. I talked to a lot of people about this political stuff off the record.
Yeah.
People that are just normal people that aren't into politics, that aren't, you know, politically active, that aren't very much informed. They just go about their business. They work. They have families. Blah 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 blah. And you ask them about this, and they're like, oh, "I don't really care." But wouldn't it be cool if Trump won? I mean, I shit you not. That's like that's like what people say. And it was just so socially pressurized to not openly support Trump, because you'd be ostracized by people, that people just hid it. They just pretended like they weren't going to vote for Trump. They went to the voting booth and everyone voted for him. That's what happened. And that's why the polling was inaccurate, because they call up people and they poll you. Well, you're not going to sit there and talk on the phone and say, oh yeah, I support Trump, because a lot of people were just embarrassed about it, you know? But the fact of the matter is, look at the states that he won. I mean, he swung a bunch of states that typically are Democratic. I mean, he swung the entire Rust Belt, and that's exactly where Bernie Sanders was tapping into a huge vein of frustration as well. I mean, Bernie Sanders would have blown Trump out of the water.
Yes.
And the Democrats could have had Bernie Sanders, but they purposely undermined him. The media purposely undermined him. The Democratic Party purposely undermined him. By all means, the Democrats rigged the primary.
Obama did.
Obama too. Yeah.
The damn president did. And now his entire legacy, if that's what you want to call it, is literally going to be reversed. It's going to be as if Obama had never been elected, whether you like him or not. It's
every executive order is gone.
Every executive order. Every executive order.
Obamacare is gone. Everything. Because the DNC overreached in their hubris. I mean,
yes.
You're talking about one of the most they're more corrupt, if that's even understandable, than the GOP. How? How did it get to that way? Because you had one part that's just greedy and the other part that's secretly ideological. It makes the GOP look like freaking choir boys from these WikiLeaks.
It's unbelievable that the DNC made the Bush era neocons seem less corrupt, even though they're clearly more corrupt. But that kind of jerry-rigging is when it's revealed like that. And look, a lot of people are mad at WikiLeaks, but look, they're publishing truth. And here's the reality, and this is a tweet I sent you guys earlier. WikiLeaks sent out what some call a rather odd tweet earlier that says, "Remember how you legalized," and then how it had a series of check marks, "assassinating anyone, NSA mass spying, prosecuting publishers, CI drones everywhere. It's all Trump's in 71 days. And that pretty much sums it up. The Democrats are about to sit in their own swamp of misery and authoritarian corruptness because they're handing over the reins of this out-of-control monster of the surveillance security state. They're handing over the reins to a freaking climate change denier. It's
Look what's happening. And do you think it's any wonder that Seattle's now experiencing violence, one of the most liberal cities? You know what? Now they're going to need more police presence, more surveillance. Let's use them as the pilot city for the new law and order template coming.
Oh, you're so right. Oh, God.
Stop and frisk. Come into a Seattle city near you, buddy.
$15 an hour. Never felt better.
Oh, well, hey, at least they got Starbucks there. Everyone will be nice and alert during the apocalypse.
Jake, you bring up a really good point, man, about that WikiLeaks tweet. And that is my biggest beef with Obama, is that he is so goddamn cool and so damn popular that he got away with almost pretty much everything. I mean, he was arguably more hawkish than George W. Bush, albeit in a different way. He didn't
right up there.
He didn't occupy countries. He just invaded their airspace with drones, and he did a lot more of them than George W. Bush did. Bush only had two countries. Obama's got like what, six or more? You know, he made all of these horrible things, like you mentioned, drone warfare, assassination of U.S. citizens. Don't forget about the NDAA, the indefinite detention without trial stuff, declaring basically anybody a terrorist and depriving them of all their rights. All that stuff was made cool under Obama. It's like, oh yeah, I know it got passed, but Obama's too cool to ever use that stuff. Yeah, well, guess what? Now you got Trump coming into office, and I don't doubt that Trump will use all that stuff. You know what I mean? The other thing is that
he will.
Disgusted with the quote-unquote anti-war left and how they let Obama get away with all of these wars, and God, how many innocent civilians had to die under Obama. Nobody ever gave him any shit, except for that one time in 2013 where we stopped the regime change in Syria. That was the only time. Every other time, Obama got away with everything foreign policy. And now, hopefully, now that a Republican is in office, maybe now we can finally have an anti-war movement again. But you know what? We can't let these kind of movements just live and die because of a certain political party that gets into power. I mean, if Hillary Clinton assumed office, who's going to oppose Hillary Clinton's wars? Nobody. You know, but hopefully it's Trump in this case, because people will actually rise up in the streets and say, you know what, Trump, we're not going to allow you to go bombing a new country because it's just ridiculous. But it's hypocritical, too, because where in the hell were these guys for the last 8 years when we were all fighting to try to stop these wars? It's like we're out in the wilderness talking to nobody, because just because there's a cool Democrat in office, nobody could oppose anything he does. It's ridiculous.
They made us sound like lunatics.
If these same people are not out before Obama tries to ram through the TPP and aren't doing the same stuff on the streets, then this is all a big moot point too, because he could ram that in and just get it done anyway, and then we're going to have to reverse. We can't reverse it once it's in. There's no time frame.
We know that's going to be the case. This is made very transparent that this idea of education is misinformation, because this idea of an uneducated white middle class that heralded the Trump presidency takes away from the fact that there is a largely there is an bachelor degree having received educated class on the liberal side that is nonetheless ignorant in a way that is almost more powerful on the left. They through cognitive dissonance, they have blinded themselves to certain truths, and that is a form of de-education that we are going to pay very dearly for now. And enough cannot be said, Nick, about this point of the reemergence of the anti-war left, and they should be ashamed of themselves. Look, everyone has a fair share of blame and regret here for having allowed something like this to happen. I certainly feel guilty for not campaigning more against Trump. But for the love of God, this anti-war left has enshrined these ideals of the Bush administration, and they created this upswell of anger against them. And now look at what's going to happen. You could very well have an anti-war right movement that is now going to bogart the idea of the anti-war movement. Because look, a lot of Trump's base was against the wars. They were against the Iraq wars. Now, many of them despise Bush. This is the alt-right movement. This is not the neocons anymore. Many of them have neoconservative tendencies, and yes, I do think they will end up recreating a lot of that, and I think that's how he will lose some of his base. But a lot of them were against these wars. And the fact that Obama could not put it in the air and sense that the masses were sick of what was going on is just astounding.
The alt-right is essentially like kind of reactionary teabaggers. When you think about it, they're like the sons and daughters in their 20s and 30s of people that were essentially the Tea Party, who heard, you know, oh, the jobs are going, and the truth, that is the truth. The jobs were offshored, and they are shittier now, and people do have less money. I don't know how we get that back on the scale we had it in the 50s and the 60s.
We can't. Those jobs aren't coming back. They're gone forever.
They can only come back in, like, cottage industry. Like, if you owned a 3D printer and you're, like, super skilled at CAD, and then you had, like, I don't know, four or five other people and had a little company. Like, that stuff can come back, but it's never going to employ millions and billions of people.
No.
It's just the demand will never be there because the robotics and the automation is too good.
Exactly. The manufacturing industry is going to be onshored, but the jobs are going to be done by robots, not human beings.
Yeah. And you'll need to have some really good technical skills, because really what's going to happen with blue-collar jobs is you're going to be techs repairing these automated systems. That's what they're going to have. A lot of $25-an-hour jobs are going to come back. And then, of course, we're going to modernize our infrastructure now, and we're not going to take any money away from the MIC. What's going to end up happening is they're going to capitulate to Bernie and say, yeah, we'll build all the roads and the trains and everything, but we're going to rebuild all our military bases too.
You know what I was looking up before we got on the air? I was looking up how old Bernie Sanders is. A part of me was like, wait a minute. 4 years from now, is he really that old that he couldn't run again? And
he can't run. No.
He'll be 79 next election. Yeah. That ain't gonna happen. Oh, you know. Although, you know, let's be real with advances in biotech. You know, life extension is getting real. In the next two decades, it will not be inconceivable for someone that age to be running. But
he deserves to retire, though. I mean, he's given a lot of his time.
He's got his third.
He's got his $600,000 house.
He's got his pension. He's got probably $1 million or something in the bank. I mean, he's okay.
Yeah, but he, I'm sure, I mean, think about how he feels. I mean, if you know, good Lord, I mean.
I feel bad for him, dude. Even though I was completely upset about him capitulating and endorsing and campaigning for Hillary.
But this is why he did that.
think about why, or think about the feelings of what if, you know, what if he would have been given a fair chance, and what if he would have been able to become the Democratic nominee.
Or F that, even my mom was Facebooking saying, what if he had gone third party? Could he have actually taken over the Hillary voters and said, if he was polling higher, if he had gone with Jill Stein and created a third party movement, this is not the part my mom said, but I'm extrapolating on that. If he had pushed that option, and that would have taken some real cojones, no doubt, but if he had done it, and then through polling, convinced the Clinton people that he was the only way that Trump could be defeated, it still could have happened. That's a revolutionary move. That would have been a revolution in politics.
Well, the only way that would have happened, like the only way Bernie could have won in that fashion, I think, would be if Trump were to break off on his own as well. And that was the thing that was really interesting about this race. It wasn't about the Democrats, and it wasn't about the Republicans. It was about Donald Trump, and it was about Bernie Sanders. But, you know, we all know what happened with Bernie Sanders. But Trump could have been running as a third-party candidate, and if he was running just against Clinton, he would have lost. But if it was Bernie Sanders running third-party, Donald Trump running third-party versus a Republican and Hillary Clinton, I think it would have been a toss-up. It would have been probably Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump. One of them would have won. You know, and so, you know, there was a real chance there. And you know, this is something that people need to keep in mind for the next time, next election. If you want a third party candidate, you got to build a movement around some character. I mean, you can't expect to build up some third party, which gets completely ignored by the media, gets completely ignored by the political system. You have to get a high profile character.
Yep.
I don't want to say like Trump, but you know what I mean. Someone who can garner that kind of attention.
Dude, Alec Baldwin, he's next. I don't particularly like the guy politically, but he's next.
Yeah, but you know, a person like that could run third party and actually win. You know, I think Trump could have won third party. I think Bernie Sanders could have won third party. You know, but we can't get like one of these, you know, ground up kind of Green Party people like Jill Stein or like Gary Johnson and expect them to come in, sweep in, and get 30-40% of the vote. It's not going to happen. You got to get someone that's already got extremely good name recognition, knows how to engage the media, knows how to generate headlines. I mean, I can't stand this shit that Trump would say, but goddamn, he was good at getting media coverage.
He's a genius, man. He played this electorate like a fiddle.
He did, and for that you gotta respect that part of it. I definitely respect I don't respect it, but I appreciate in the most objective of ways his strategy, because he did it with 1/3 of the money that Clinton did. He spent from what I read, Clinton spent about $10 a vote. Donald Trump only spent about $5 per vote that he received. So, I mean, he spent way less money. He had way less of an organization. He didn't have the get-out-the-vote apparatus. None of that stuff. I mean, he was a one-man political party, basically, and it worked. And so for that, I objectively, you know, got to appreciate the strategy, because, you know, he beat the shit out of a pretty professional political machine that was deeply in bed with basically every single American institution. You know, and that has to speak for something. Now, on the topic of the, you know, formerly anti-war left, I want to talk about how Trump's following is even more loyal than Obama's is. And that, to me, is one very big issue, because of that, just like how Obama had his loyal following of Democrats and you know, for many people, Obama could do no wrong. In fact, I still know people that think Obama is an anti-war president. They just don't. They don't care to learn about anything, any of the horrible things he's done on foreign policy. They just don't care to learn about that, or care about that, or even believe it or acknowledge it, even though it's plain as day. But Trump garners a much more loyal base, and that is going to work against any chance of holding his feet to the fire and making sure that he actually doesn't become this kind of establishment politician that he ran against, because his followers will not question him. I mean, all they do is make excuses for him. Think about all the gaffes that Donald Trump had throughout the primary season. And, you know, I can't tell you how many arguments I got in with Trump supporters about this, that the comments that leaked about him saying he's going to grab women by the pussy. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I got in arguments with that supported Trump that were defending him or making excuses. I mean, one guy was like, well, he was saying that they would consent to it, you know, and I'm like, he was saying that he would just grab them and they would accept it because he was so rich and famous. So, I mean, his supporters are going to make excuse after excuse after excuse for him. So Trump, I mean, I hate to say it, I'm pretty sure that he's just going to be another politician. I could be wrong. Now, here's how we'll know. If Trump goes through his first term with no assassination attempt, well, then you know that he's just being a good old boy and he's just playing the game. If somebody tries to kill Trump, then you know that he's going against the book. And, you know, that's kind of what happens. You know, and you know, I think these guys are given a choice, and I think Obama came in with probably good intentions, and I think he was given a choice. And it was like, look, man, you know, you want to end these wars and stuff. We understand that's how you got elected, and you might believe it, but, you know, here's what we got to do, and you got to play by these rules, and, you know, just let's do that, and your family and you will be okay. And, you know, Obama definitely, pretty much for the most part, he just stuck to the script and he played by the rules that were given to him. Now Trump, I think, you know, from what I could tell, is his candidacy is unscripted. I think the script was for Hillary Clinton to win. So I think Trump's candidacy is unscripted, but that's not saying that he's going to be that. First of all, I'm not saying he's anti-establishment. He's anything but. I mean, the guy is, you know, the left hand of the oligarchy. You know, the oligarchy is made up of the corporate class and then the ruling class, and they work together to create wealth for themselves and influence.
He's Trump has been a
big time donor of all these politicians for a long time. I mean, he's bankrolled Hillary Clinton on numerous occasions. So Trump is not an outsider. He buys and sells politicians. That's what he did for a long time, and it helped make him a lot of money. So he, from that aspect, he is not an outsider, but I do think he may be unscripted. Now, the only thing that could work in the favor of the public here is his massive ego. And is his massive ego going to tell him, hey, dude, you got to be the greatest president ever, and you got to really actually stick it to the establishment? Now, I don't think that could happen, but I do think it's a possibility. I mean, you know, It could happen, but, you know, we're going to have to see. You know, he comes, when is it, January 5th or something, when the new president is supposed to take power. So, you know, we're going to see how it plays out. And, you know, again, he's got that 100-day plan. Most of those guys don't ever stick to their 100-day plan. And who knows the circumstances that are going to be playing out when he gets in. I mean, look at this, what's going on in Seattle. If that shooting winds up being related to the anti-Trump protests, let's see how extreme these anti-Trump protests get. Let's see how, if and how the tensions that we have going on with Russia, if they escalate before Trump takes office, because you never know. I mean, the war between the U.S. and Russia, they could start shooting at each other before Trump takes office. And again, like Jake said, Obama could try to ram the TPP through before, you know, Trump takes office as well. And
why would he? I mean, seriously, why would Obama do that? Would be really that would be a kick to the stomach if he did that. I mean, dude, is that really what you want?
He's going to do the TPP thing for sure.
Is that really what you want your legacy to be? Why don't you do a executive order on some climate change thing, man?
He made promises. That's the problem. And if he doesn't at least do diligence to try to fulfill them, maybe he'll have a plane crash. Who knows?
Trump
the problem, I was just going to say, you know, the problem is that he really, at this point, he's been implicated, involved in these things with ordering hot dogs to the White House for $650,000. So I don't care what the fuck, sorry to curse, but I don't care what the connotation that is. If he really did indeed order $650,000 of hot dogs to the White House, then he's got a serious problem anyway.
So you're arguing there's a kind of back end shakedown going on with some of these politicians right now that we're not seeing.
And some may not take it, so some may go to jail, and there may be trials. You know, but, and they're going to do.
Are you really sure that that's really going to shake out like that? Because
because it could tear the country apart. That's the problem. So, if it happens, if anything like that were to happen, it'd be after the inauguration. It'd be after they iron everything out. You know, test drive everything and see how people respond.
And to be transparent here, DB is referring to allegations of a massive pedophilia rink going on in Washington in that the Clintons were connected to.
And not only them, but it was connected to the president. I mean, his stamp was on it, and the things were allowed to happen in the White House, unless they're using code for that too. I mean, it gets deeper and deeper, and that's the
thing. I just
think
we have to be really sure about something. I mean, it's a pretty massive allegation, man. I just think we have to be sure that
you gotta read the WikiLeaks.
Okay, how can we be sure Hot Dogs doesn't refer to something else illegal? Why does it have to be pedophilia?
The only thing I can say is that why would you hide drug use? I mean, look at what's going on with Wiener. Wiener's in a sex addiction camp right now, riding horseback in San Diego, I think, Nick, or something like that. He's right now living the freaking life, loving it. Like, his deal protected him from anything heinous, and it just admitted, I'm a sex addict, I have a problem with prostitutes. It had nothing to do with anything illegal or underage, so he got off real clean.
Well,
and
here's the other thing, dude, and this is really big, because, you know, let's think about the blackmail factor here. I'm not familiar with anything with Obama on that front. I know there was some crazy stuff in the Podesta emails, and many people have suspected that it had to do with possibly pedophilia or sex with like underage girls and stuff. Now let's look at what we know for sure. Bill Clinton was on Jeffrey Epstein's Lolita Express plane that is known as some kind of sex plane. He had his own private island where he was accused of having sex slaves, and let's just assume Bill Clinton visited that island on several of the 26 times that he flew on this guy's plane, because he dropped Secret Service attachment to him several times when he took that plane. Now let's look at the other side of this. Who else was found in Jeffrey Epstein's little black book? Donald Trump. Who was the woman who had a rape charge against Donald Trump? She was reportedly raped by Donald Trump at age 13 by him and Jeffrey Epstein.
So how did he escape from this?
Well, the woman dropped the case last week.
But why wouldn't they think that WikiLeaks is not going to end up turning up something on that? I mean, if this is really so blatantly right out in the open for the NYPD, why would the establishment be thinking that Trump won't be taken down in this as well?
Well, here's what I'm trying to say here. Now, here's the thing. If this Jeffrey Epstein dude, from everything that I can tell, I mean, who else makes a living out of going around billionaires and extremely powerful people to have sex with underage girls? Like, why would anyone do that besides if you're trying to blackmail people or if you're trying to put dirt on people to use it for leverage later on? Now, maybe that's the leverage that they have on Trump, and maybe that's why he's been allowed to win, because they know that it's like, okay, Trump, you can get in the office, buddy, but
I got you.
The moment you step out of line, guess what? The dirt that we got on you from Epstein comes out, and you're going to be nailed to the wall as a pedophile.
Okay, good point, but maybe he doesn't care.
But, I mean, even with the insane loyal supporters that he's got, pedophilia is not something you come back from. It's just not.
No, there's not going to be any coming back from that.
And, you know, DB, you mentioned before that you think that the Epstein dude is just part of a huge blackmail operation. I mean, you know, what do you think about my theory there on that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And he's protected. Epstein's protected by another organization, and it shouldn't be too hard to tell from his last name who he's probably an asset for. So, you know, let's not be too rough on ourselves. According to Canadian press, the U.S. ambassador to Canada stated, Obama will push for the TPP to be passed before Trump takes power. So this is directly from the U.S. ambassador to Canada, a warning, a warning. So one of the good guys saying this is going to happen. So if these people tonight protesting don't stop TPP, this is all for nothing anyway.
And with reference to that last name there, headline that's coming up on CNN, but according to Biden, Trump will stand with Israel. I don't, is that a surprise or not? I don't know.
Absolutely not. It's two sides of a coin, man. I guess they're going to go with Israel over Saudi Arabia. They're going to throw them under the bus. What that tells me really succinctly is that we probably have enough oil supply. We don't need them anymore. With the DAPL, will just get rerouted. And the protests will stop, and we'll have a domestic oil supply, and we'll throw them under the bus. We'll knock them out first, and then we'll have some kind of proxy in Africa with China, and Russia will be our ally. It'll be weird.
Yeah, so that's one of the geopolitical things that we should talk about too, because this is some stuff that, you know, could be pretty interesting. One person that Trump has floated for his cabinet was like a executive for Lucas Oil, which is a big oil company in the United States. Now, looking at how Trump has been pretty friendly with Russia, looking at the geopolitical situation in Syria and all that stuff, and why the U.S. is at odds with Russia is because we're trying to get a pipeline that goes from Saudi Arabia and Qatar up through Syria into Europe to cut Russia out. Now, if Trump is planning on working with Russia, then why would he want to work any longer with the Saudis? Because at this point, the only thing the Saudis are offering the United States, really, when it comes to geopolitical stuff, is they are our proxy war to create, you know, Islamic extremist movements to destabilize governments that we're not friendly with. Trump doesn't seem to be that interested in carrying out that stuff. And he's not so interested in hooking up Saudi Arabia by fighting against Russia to give them that pipeline. So, you know, Trump has already been pretty openly hostile towards Saudi Arabia with some of the 9/11 stuff. And I've heard him make a bunch of comments about Saudi Arabia. So I can definitely see. And look,
they have weapons of mass destruction, Nick.
Looking at all the stuff that's come out recently on Saudi Arabia, the 28 pages, how basically everyone that does any research knows that Saudi Arabia is more or less the ones funding ISIS. You know, Saudi Arabia has become very unpopular with the American public, and Saudi Arabia is already hedging its bets, and it's already said it was going to start pulling out its holdings in U.S. treasuries. Because of that law that was passed that allowed Americans to sue foreign governments that were accused of being behind 9/11, which Saudi Arabia obviously has been implicated. So ties with Saudi Arabia have been on the decline for a long time. I think Obama's been trying to hold them together, but I think everybody knows that they're coming undone. Now, as Trump comes into office and he starts working with Russia, Saudi Arabia is completely cut out of the equation. Syria goes back to Russia, and Iraq goes kind of back to Iran. And, you know, Saudi Arabia really has strategically made some major mistakes over there in the Middle East, and now they're pretty much unliked by everybody except for their allies that are directly around them, which are very small countries. Very small countries. Qatar, United Arab Emirates. You know, these are tiny countries, man, and they don't have that much military strength. Saudi Arabia is the only one with a big army, and their army is they're being used right now in Yemen in an inorganic kind of way that is just, it kills your morale. They're taking a lot of losses. They're not making any progress. Saudi Arabia is on a major decline, and they're pretty much going to be very, very reduced on the world stage in under the Trump presidency. That's one thing I can definitely foresee coming. But you know, the entire geopolitical foundation of the Middle East, it's been shifting. Whether, you know, the U.S. Empire has been trying to hold it in a certain way, but it's been shifting, and we haven't been able to contain it because there's a bunch of organic movements over there that are undermining a bunch of the inorganic movements that we've built. And so, you know, the entire landscape is shifting over there. Trump's going to take office, and he's going to ally himself with Russia. And everything's going to change over there, man. For better or for worse, it's going to be an entirely different Middle East by the time the next president takes office, if there's a next president. You know, everything's changing over there. So that's something that's going to be something really close that we're going to be watching here on the Anti-Media and paying attention to and writing about, because that's where a lot of stuff is going to start playing out even more than it is now. And then the big question here is, what's going to happen with China? Because as we all know, Trump has been extremely harsh on China. Now, the thing is that the TPP was basically, what most people don't realize is the TPP is an anti-Chinese economic maneuver to kind of put leverage over top of China to get them to do not be, you know, asserting themselves militarily around the Southeast, you know, Southeast Asia, the South China Sea. If Trump successfully scraps the TPP, well, there goes all of our leverage over top of China. Philippines has realigned itself with China. Malaysia is realigning itself with China. A bunch of the people that we thought were our allies over there, everyone except for Japan, pretty much, is realigning itself closer to China, away from the United States. So the TPP goes away, well, then China is going to be basically free to run rampant all around Asia, and we're going to be relatively helpless to stop them from doing anything. I mean, there's a lot of big things happening right now, mostly over in the Middle East, Eastern Europe, and in China. Now, the Eastern Europe front is going to cool off if the United States is able to, under Trump, is able to strike a deal with Putin and say, okay, we're cool now. We can start taking NATO out of Eastern Europe, and the Russians can take their troops out of, you know, defensive mode over there on the Western front of Russia. You know, and so the Eastern European front, the NATO front, that's going to cool off. The Middle East and South China, that's going to heat up. So that's where we got to really keep an eye on what's going to be happening. I mean, this is, of course, long-term projection stuff, but, you know, 5 years from now, the entire geopolitical focus may be over there on the South China Sea, and we may be going head-to-head with China. So that's something that we got to be really keeping an eye on and making sure that we're not getting ourselves, maybe we won't be getting into a war with Russia at this point, but maybe next will be China. So we got to be really careful about that. I don't think anybody wants to see the United States fight China. That would just be a disaster. So yeah, that's what I'm looking at in the long term under Trump.
What's with this California stuff going on now, where they want to become their own country? I would be really worried about that. And then with war drums starting with China, I mean, dude, you can see them just offer it up on a plate.
Yeah, like. Yeah.
I, for one, you know, I consider myself an anarchist, but I'm also a realist. I think that secession and defederalization, I honestly think, is the next realistic step. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't think that it's realistic that California is actually going to break off from the rest of the country. I think they're just saying that because Trump won. But, you know, I'm in Texas right now, and believe me, the people in this neighborhood where I'm at, they're all Trump supporters, and they're all celebrating. But, you know, last month, they're all talking about secession. They're all talking about leaving the United States. In fact, the secessionist movement in Texas is pretty big. I mean, a lot of people out here are like, let's break off of this damn country. They're all ridiculous. We don't want to deal with these Yankees anymore.
Not now, though, right?
So, what's that?
Not now, though, right?
That's what I'm saying. With Trump being elected, it'll probably cool off for the next 4 to 8 years. But when a Democrat comes back into office, yeah, the Texans are going to want to secede. In California, when a Democrat gets elected, they're going to be like, okay, we don't want to secede anymore. But honestly, in my opinion, that's what we need, dude. This big federal government, there's 330 million people. There's I was reading, in fact, we put an article up on it today on the Anti-Media. I encourage you to check it out. This country should actually be split up into like 11 different countries based on demographics, cultural things, political things. I mean, we can't have this giant country anymore. It's not representing us. We need smaller government, more bullshit. Thank you all for tuning in.
I'ma let them know, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.